Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Bud Maher.
And we are coming to you from our very human situation where maybe we sound a bit more like Louis Armstrong or a croaking frog. Forgive us. But we have caught viruses. But we also are coming from Mercy Live Up Studios here in Des Moines, Iowa, the Iowa Catholic Radio Network, where we're broadcasting to you live. Bud is in the future, in a different time zone entirely, in Pittsburgh. But thanks to the miracle of modern technology, he joins us as well. IowaCatholicRadio.com, 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live. And if you have the Iowa Catholic Radio app, thanks to Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can listen to us darn near tootin' anywhere. You can also get to, you can talk to us on social media, Iowa Catholic Radio on Facebook, at IA Catholic Radio on Twitter. And if you would like to use our text line, 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150. And if your tweet or whatever your text is not too insane, we might read it on air. Bud, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay, except for this little chest congestion, but what's the state of our union?
The Super Bowl's coming up. I think you were wanting a political answer, but I think the better answer is the Super Bowl. Yeah. I was talking with Jeb. You know, we have our own eagle that we play, right? Like Jeb either fires it off before we go to segments or randomly. I'm sure. There you go. And so as to not seem too, you know, partisan, I thought maybe we should name our eagle to distinguish it from the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes. Well, what does a Patriot sound like? Hip hip hooray.
There's so many like jokes that we could get in trouble going that regard.
You're really walking into that week? One.
My predictions are, I'm just so tired of the Patriots playing in Super Bowls. What about you? Because you're in Pittsburgh, which team do they hate more, like the Philadelphia Eagles or the Patriots?
I'm trying to figure that all out. I know they really dislike the Browns, which is funny because the Browns probably haven't beaten them for about a decade.
Right.
They don't seem to hate the Patriots. I think Patriots is kind of Team B, even in Pittsburgh. So I know a lot of people dislike the Patriots. For me, I love a good conspiracy theory, so I've been reading up about how the NFL fixes the games for the Patriots.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. That being that I have known many people who try to, like, conspire to make sure we all go to a restaurant they like and can't pull it off, I'm just never convinced of conspiracy theories, but that's a lot of moving parts, and humans are involved.
Well, I know, but did you see the video of the ref, like, right after the Patriots won? They're like, oh, the ref ran up, and he almost congratulated Tom Brady before Brady's teammates did. So I don't know. I know in St. Louis, the St. Louisans were still bitter about
Kansas
the Super
City.
Bowl loss.
Oh, that's not the Royals, but go ahead.
You know the whole theory that the Patriots taped some of the Jets' practices,
right?
I don't know. The Rams that year were favored so much against the Patriots and lost, and so somehow the story started circulating that like Tapegate also related to that Super Bowl loss, and callers would get angry on air and just fuming mad. That's now we don't care because they moved to Los Angeles.
That's right. I think maybe you're answering the question about the state of our union. Is we spend a lot of time about conspiracy theories about people taping practices.
That's right.
As always, brought to you by Cartridge World. But I guess if you were going to do a conspiracy, Cartridge World could help save you money with all of the documents that you'd be printing out and giving to your friends.
They do help save money, but the nice thing is you talk to someone like Joe over there and some of their other employees, and they're very grounded people. So
yeah,
when I'm about to go off the deep end, Cartridge World is great on a number of fronts.
Over in Windsor Heights, and just to clarify, folks, I don't think they're involved in any conspiracies unless saving you money is a conspiracy, Bud.
That's right.
Also underwritten, as always, by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Folks, we really want you to join us next week, Thursday, February 8th, at 6 o'clock, we have our third Faith and Healing speaker, and it's going to be a great one. Bishop Pates, our very own, ordinary of the Diocese of Des Moines, is going to get the chance to talk about his travelings to and fro. You know, he's led a very interesting life, especially for someone from Minnesota, Bud. Let's all be very honest. No, I'm kidding. But he has stories to tell, and I just think it's going to be a wonderful time. If you get there at 6 o'clock, we're right off the highway off of 235. We have heavy hors d'oeuvres and everything like that. If you go to mchs.edu/faithandhealing, you can register. You don't have to register to come, but it's always nice to know how much food we should get.
Well, I hope this comment isn't interpreted in the wrong way, because if I had my druthers, Bishop Pates would be bishop for a few more decades. But as we know in the Catholic Church, when you reach a certain age, they ask about retirement. So is there any conversation around this? I guess the lesson of it all is, like, take advantage, go out and listen to him while you still have the chance.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard anything except I think that his birthday sometime in February, too, I think.
And oh, so, you guys at Mercy should get him a cake for that night, or you know, some sort of acknowledgement.
That's true. So we'll. I never thought about that. We'll get him a cake and make him feel awkward, and we'll be like, "You're 75. we'll see you soon." But I don't know. This is going bad. But yeah, you're right. I get the idea. Well, we'll just get a nice cake, and he's going to be sending in his notification to the Pope. So that means that if you want to get to see him talk, this is one of your best chance. February 8th. At 6 o'clock at Mercy College of Health Sciences, free and open to the public. Well, we're going to go to the break here pretty quick, Bud, and when we get back, we have Dr. Taylor Patrick O'Neill, one of the new assistant professors in religious studies over at Mount Mercy, sister institution to Mercy, just over on the east side of the state. We're going to talk about Rerum Novarum and, you know, really get down to some nice talk about the nitty-gritty with social teaching. So stick around. We'll be back. This is the Uncommon Good.
Ladies, our next Mosaic Luncheon will feature Cindy Shaw, co-director of the Emmaus House. She will offer us a look into the ministries of Emmaus House, its history, and an overview of Ignatian spirituality. The luncheon will be on Thursday, February 8th at St. Mary's of Nazareth Church in Des Moines. Doors open at 11:30, and the lunch and program go from 12 to 1. Join us for food, fellowship, and an inspiring presentation. Reserve your seat today at iowacatholicradio.com or call 223-1150 and make.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient. Learn more at svdpsm.org or call 515-282-8327. This message brought to you by Homemakers Furniture. Support for Dowling Catholic Sports is provided by Two Rivers Glass and Door, creating commercial glass and aluminum storefronts. Also serving your home needs by creating custom frameless shower doors, mirrors, glass tabletops, and specialty glass. Two Rivers Glass and Door. Design, fabrication, and installation. 515-222-4860. Online at tworiversglass.com. Two Rivers Glass and Door. Serving imaginations since 1992.
Back with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We have with us today, over from the east side of the state, Dr. Taylor Patrick O'Neill, Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Mount Mercy. He is a newbie over there, a first time on the show, and we're really glad to have him and to have him be part of the big old Iowa Catholic family. Dr. O'Neill, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Bo and Bud.
It's been a pleasure. We heard all sorts of great things for a guest that we've had on, Dr. Brian Cross out there. Guys doing some good work out east. Now, where are you from originally, and how's the east of Iowa striking you?
Yeah, I'm originally from Wisconsin, so it's not that different. So in a way, it's kind of like coming back home to the Midwest, so I'm enjoying it.
That's fantastic. And so then the thought on everyone's mind is you don't necessarily have, you know, any any vested interest in this Super Bowl either, so you're just going to sleep through the evening, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as long as I'm happy that the Vikings are out, and so now I can sort of sleep well.
Oh, shots fired.
Well, so we get a chance to talk to you and ask you to come on the show, and we say, hey, you know, your first time, you want to talk? What do you want to throw out there? What do we want to warm up with? And you go, boom, rerum novarum. Let's just get down to it. So,
right.
A man after my own heart. Let's talk about these things. So, I'm sure Catholics who have, in any way, started to hear about Catholic social teaching formally have heard about rerum novarum. If you don't mind, could you maybe set up? I mean, promulgated by Pope Leo XIII. Maybe just a little bit of context about when it came about in the church and why it has had such a long-standing ramifications for Catholic social teaching.
Yeah, you know, this is an encyclical. It was released in the late 19th century, so it was released in 1891. But it's been kind of necessary reading for anyone interested in Catholic social teaching since. And I think the reason for that is that the issues that are addressed by Leo XIII here are issues that are at least as relevant today as they were in the late 19th century when it was written. So really, it's a document that is sort of looking at questions like, what is a just wage? How should workers be treated? Even things like, you know, wealth inequality, and how do those relate to the society at large, and how do those relate to the question of justice, which, of course, is something that the church has to be concerned with. And so it lays out some answers, but the answers are, you know, have to be applied prudently. And so it's a document that's still been mined by Catholics and non-Catholics alike to kind of jump into and try to find some answers to these questions.
And, you know, Bud pointed out in the opening of the show, we've just yesterday had a State of the Union address. I think most people would say the State of the Union is it's rather divided, not only about Super Bowl teams, but politics as well. And so when people hear maybe a Catholic radio show, maybe Catholic radio hosts walking about their day, wanting to bring up Catholic social teaching in terms like just wages, either everybody is like, let's change the subject, or they maybe burrow down into the bunkers they think that they belong in. One of the things I think is very interesting about Rerum Novarum is, A, this means over 100 years Catholics have been talking about things that were mentioned yesterday in all of the political brouhaha, but also that both of this consideration of Rerum Novarum is both more basic, but then also more forward-thinking, I think, than either side of the political debate. You say that to people, and I don't know if they always believe you. Why do you think it is that Rerum Novarum is, so to speak, that anybody, whatever political spectrum you find yourself in modern America, that Rerum Novarum can still speak to either side?
Yeah, I think that if one, you know, we have these sort of gut responses, I think partly because the culture is so divided, and partly because we tend to box even just phrases or words into one of two political camps or one of two political parties. You know, it seems to me that the history of the Catholic Church's social and political teaching is it's trans-political, right? It doesn't fall, especially in a largely secular nation like America. It's not like the church comes down and says that the Republican Party is the party for Catholics in the United States of America or the Democratic Party. And I think that some of the issues that the church talks about, you know, because they're so fundamental to the health and the flourishing of society, should be concerns to both parties. And one of the sort of specters, I think, hiding behind concern, especially maybe more on the American conservative side when talking about things like workers' rights or just wages or things like that, distribution of wealth, is the concern that, you know, what we're talking about here really is socialism. But Rerum Novarum sort of explicitly condemns socialism. It's one of the stronger condemnations the church has given regarding sort of classical socialism. And so I really think that it's a document that everyone, every person who's Catholic, every person who's Christian, even non-Christians, should look at, because as you said, these are issues that are as relevant today as they are now. And there are some answers here that maybe fall outside of the lines of the sort of two-party system in America.
Taylor, this is Bud Maher, and this is kind of piggybacking on what you just said, but in discussions of Catholic social teaching with other Catholics, I've occasionally heard the comment that, you know, well, the Pope or Popes, they don't really understand the American context. And in our society, conservatives tend to be, like when we use that language loosely, tend to be concerned about state interventions when it comes to economic matters. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, the difficulty of kind of navigating different social contexts? So economies are going to look different in different parts of the world. And what would you say maybe to an American who is suspicious of, you know, what the popes might have to say about these matters?
Yeah, you know, I think that one of the things that when you read, one of the things you see when you read Rerum Novarum is that it's not giving specific guidelines that have to be followed.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that the Church usually does is it tends to clarify its teaching by condemning things that it sees are obviously intrinsically evil or things which are obviously going against the natural law or the eternal law. And so what Rerum Novarum kind of does is it sets up some broad parameters, right? And it says that classical socialism is not an answer, and it goes through reasons for that, primarily because it, you know, negates the right of humans to private property. But it also puts some checks maybe on, you know, unfettered capitalism, completely unfettered relations between employers and employees. But in the middle, there's this huge, wide range. And so, you know, Catholics read Rerum Novarum, and there's a very big differences of opinions on how to apply its principles. And I think part of that ambiguity, if we want to use that word, is intentional for what, you know, some of the reasons that you just said, which are that each state, each country, each culture is different, yep. And we're going to have to take different approaches based upon the particular circumstances of any given country. And so there's this sort of broad middle between these extremes that are kind of condemned, and I think that's where the conversation has to happen.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We're speaking with Dr. Taylor Patrick O'Neill, Assistant Professor of Religious Studies over at Mount Mercy University here in Iowa. Taylor, one of the things, you know, you hear the word just wage, and one of the showcases, I think, of Catholic social teaching is terms that come from a pope over in Italy 100 years ago now swim in the political water of a place as very different, as you said, as 2018 United States. That being that shows you that there is a powerful impact that people have still thought about what that means. But it does also mean that if you're the sort of average Catholic in the pews, you might hear just wage first from the sort of political context and not really know what it means inside of Catholic social teaching itself. So for in that regard, Rerum Novarum, what is it driving at when it says just wage? What do we mean? Because to your point, just wage is not some magical calculus. It's not like if you can make blank amount an hour, the Catholic Church says you're good to go. It really is context dependent. 2018 America is different than 1950 America, different than 1765 Belgium. But there's still this idea that just wage would apply in all those cases. So what does Leo XIII mean by that?
Yeah, he seems to define what he says to be, you know, a just wage by saying that if you are someone who's a member of the working class and you are working for a living, right, which means that you are working to earn a salary and you are working full time, that you should be paid at least enough that you're able to live, you know, with the basic necessities of life. And you know, exactly what that means could be up for some sort of debate, but it seems that what he's really driving at is that you should at least be able to feed yourself, clothe yourself, you know, give shelter to you and your family, and you know, that's at the sort of bare minimum that justice requires if you are working for a living.
Well, and I think that sometimes one way I like to put it is if just wage in our context, sounds liberal, or like we said, is the province of one sort of social arrangement or side in the political debate. I like to point out to people that actually, to me, it seems that Leo XIII is talking about just wage as a matter of families, actually. It's a family matter. His bellwether seems to be by Catholic charity and by natural law, societies owe as much as possible to the most basic unit of society, the family, the ability for it to exist and thrive as much as possible. So just wage is less like only thinking about it in terms of distribution, which I think we'll talk about in a bit, but it's actually a matter of, do you care about families or not? And if you want there to be families and strong families, well, you have to be able to make it possible for them to have a just wage.
Right, and that's where Rerum Novarum touches on so many topics, not just sort of just wage or workers' rights. And one of the things that Rerum Novarum really gets to is the sort of defining the state, right, as a society which is made up at its most fundamental or elemental. It's made up of families, right? Family is the most basic society. And so the things that he's writing about here are meant primarily for the health of the state, but through the health of the family. If someone is required to work for a living, it's important that they're able to provide for their family. And if they can't properly provide for their family, it's not just detrimental to the individual, it's detrimental to spouses, to children, but it also is detrimental to the whole. And that's one of the other points that he makes, is that we shouldn't be looking for a kind of egalitarian society where everyone is the same class and everyone makes the same amount of money. He explicitly argues against that. But what he does say is that in a proper society, in a very Thomistic sense, right, he sees that a society is made up of, it's a kind of a community, right? It's made up of individuals, but they're in a way existing in reciprocal relationships with each other. And so making sure that the family is strong should actually help all of society, not just any particular family.
Taylor, a lot of what we're talking about here, it kind of reminds me of this principle of subsidiarity, about how, you know, problems, insofar as possible, should be dealt with at the local level, and then that higher level institutions should do what they can to empower, you know, local groups to address those matters. You know, especially with like Leo XIII's discussion of unions in this document, was this really sort of the genesis of that idea that's become really significant in Catholic social teaching?
Yeah, there were, you know, unionizing workers before this document came out. So it's not like this is the thing that invented unions or anything like that. But it is a document which gave a lot of credence to Catholic workers to recognize that unionizing is just. And Rerum Novarum is not impractical. Leo sees and says that there are problems that can creep in with unions, and where those problems creep in, the church and the state need to work together to make sure that the unions are working primarily not for necessarily political gain or to put certain people into office or those sorts of things, but working to make sure that the employees that it represents, the workers that it represents, are able to live, and so they're able to support their families.
Taylor, I think that it's important for people to, you know, understand that as well, that for Leo in Rerum Novarum, he's not looking at what's happening in the world and saying, like, okay, you're right, you guys all have these new ideas, let's baptize them, or, you know, let's just cave in or not, or these are the ones we are going to check off, and these are the ones that we're going to be against. Leo thinks that, okay, well, the church actually has a long history of doing similar things, so it makes sense that workers unionize, because of course they used to be in guilds, and like in the Middle Ages, that's like a huge part of society was gilded labor. It's not completely foreign for the church to talk about how do people share their resources. You only have to look at Acts to see that there's groups of people that sell off everything and they own and own it in common. The question is, what has the church decided about the prudence of private property and communal property and how you hold these things together? So one of the things that I thought was unique about Rerum Novarum, and why I think of all the encyclicals, it's one we keep referring to, is it was timely. It really did speak to a moment of disconcerting developments in Europe and the world. But it also did a really good job of evoking the Catholic tradition and past to say, we have the resources to deal even with these seemingly new things.
Right, and you know, it's a document which is it's calling upon the past, and it's rooted primarily in this strong tradition of lauding private property. And private property is seen not just as a good, but it's a good which is due. It's due to each person. So what Raram Navarm spends a lot of time talking about is how owning things is constitutive of being a human being, right? So this idea that that property is something that isn't really that important, or that the state can go ahead and collect our property, and the state can, you know, give out property communally, we can own things together. That idea that some people might want to read into Raram Navarum is decidedly condemned. The church has always lauded private property as a good that is due to the individual and is due to the family.
Well, and Bo, you mentioned the timeliness of the document. Taylor, how would you assess? So I know the background to some of what Pope Leo XIII was addressing was how the Industrial Revolution had left some people behind, and, you know, it had created great wealth for some, but many wage laborers were really struggling just to get by. How far have we come? There's similar issues that we face today, right?
Right. He talks about how he thinks that the state should not necessarily in a normative way that the state needs to be meddling in the economy. In fact, he says the opposite. He says that, normally speaking, the state is there to promote peace, to promote order, and to promote the flourishing of its citizens. Okay, and so in an ideal society, the economy would just work out, people wouldn't take advantage of other people, and so everyone would be able to have something. You know, obviously not everyone is going to have the same amount, and that's a good. Raram Navarum, you know, is not a document which is trying to get to some sort of communist utopia that's egalitarian. But one of the issues seems to be that historically with the Industrial Revolution, right, you've got replacing smaller family-owned businesses or properties that are handed down over the course of generations. That with industry, smaller operations, smaller businesses are slowly kind of bought up, are put into the conglomerate, and we move closer and closer to monopolies. And so Leo's main concern is not even necessarily to make sure that there are no bigger businesses and smaller businesses or anything like that. But what he's concerned with is that it can be a temptation for those who have a lot, for those who are rich, for those who are in control of corporations, to use their workers as what he says mere instruments for money making. And so what he's trying to do is remind the state and remind employers that you have to, at the very least, treat your workers as human beings and see them in a holistic manner, not just as cogs in a machine, right? You know, the industrial factories are filled with machines, so it's easy, it's kind of tempting to see that the humans are just another part of the machinery in the factory. But of course, that can't be the case. We can't fall into that way of seeing humans as just robots or machines.
And I think to that, this sort of instrumentalization or even a mechanization of the human being in the workforce, calling to older Catholic ideas like that property, although God has constituted it to humans, humans are never for the sake of property. Property is for the sake of man. Humanity is not for the sake of economics. Economics is for the sake of society. That Leo really points out that none of these claims have sort of an absolute claim on us that is above that of the human. You know, so you think famously of Thomas Aquinas pointing out that private property is due to people, but it's not absolute. And you talk about the person who's starving and, you know, gets a potato on the road or whatever. The idea that Leo keeps pressing is, in an age that the 19th century really was, where they've tried to absolutize everything, so Newton's laws are absolute, the laws of history are absolute, all of these laws are absolute, he really puts out this very prudential document and says, the minute that you absolutize these non-human things, the human being fades away, and therefore the image of God fades away in society.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it's a profoundly anti-modern document in the sense that what he takes on in the document are prevailing ideas, which I think we still struggle with, which are that basically, you know, the will is primary. There is no such thing as human nature that needs to be constantly revered and constantly recognized. And so, for example, he takes up the question of, well, you know, it's said by some that, you know, if a worker and an employee agree on a certain wage, that, you know, then that's what makes it just, right? If there's an assent, right? If there's a willful assent on behalf of the worker. But he says, no, no, that's not enough. We've got to keep in mind human nature. And so humans, because of their dignity, because they're made in the image of God, and because they exist in a society which is supposed to have good reciprocal order and relations between the classes, each individual human being is due at least what's required to continue living, right? If humans are good, it's good that humans live, and you can't live if you don't have food or shelter, those kinds of things. And so he says that the question of workers' pay is really a question that pertains to human nature and not just to the autonomy of the will or a kind of voluntarism in that way.
Well, Taylor, this is a very interesting topic that I think when we get back from the break that we can really dive into that. Can you stick around with us for the second half of the show?
Yeah, no problem.
Fantastic. Well, folks, we'll be back soon with Dr. Taylor O'Neill, Taylor Patrick O'Neill, out at Mount Mercy University. This is The Uncommon Good. Stick around. Also, folks, if you want to make sure to interact with the show, 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150, that's our text line. You can Twitter at IA Catholic Radio or Facebook Iowa Catholic Radio. And then keep in mind that we have the Ladies Mosaic Luncheon on Iowa Catholic Radio's sponsoring Thursday, February 8th. And then also Faith for the Journey, the Iowa Catholic Men's Conference. That is going to be March 10th. Great speakers like Dr. Alan Hunt, Trent Horn, and some dude hosting it named Bo Bonner. Stick around. We'll be back with The Uncommon Good.
Ladies, our next Mosaic Luncheon will feature Cindy Shaw, co-director of the Emmaus House. She will offer us a look into the ministries of Emmaus House, its history, and an overview of Ignatian spirituality. The luncheon will be on Thursday, February 8th at St. Mary's of Nazareth Church in Des Moines. Doors open at 11:30, and the lunch and program go from 12 to 1. Join us for food, fellowship, and an inspiring presentation. Reserve your seat today at iowacatholicradio.com or call 223-1150 and make your souls active in Christ.
St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient. Learn more at svdpsm.org or call 515-282-8327. This message brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Do you have a story? Well, God wants to hear it. Maybe you can't donate money or volunteer your time, but that doesn't mean that you can't evangelize for the Lord. Iowa Catholic Radio is on a mission of evangelization, and you can help by sharing your testimony with us. Just call 515-223-1150, extension 27, and tell us how Iowa Catholic Radio has impacted your life. Or you can also email your testimony to contact@kwky.com.
There are millions of children that go hungry every day. Thank you to Skeffington's Formalware for supporting Mary's Meals. Their vision is that every child in the world should be able to receive at least one good meal every day in a place of education. Mary'sMealsUSA.org.
Back with The Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, speaking with Dr. Taylor Patrick O'Neill, Assistant Professor of Religious Studies, Mount Mercy University on the east side of the state. Taylor, thank you for joining us on the second half of the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So one of the things that we've brought up in the first part of the show, speaking about Leo XIII's encyclical Rerum Novarum and its endearing influence on speaking about Catholic social teaching, we bring up just wage, and we point out that just wage, you left the last segment saying, it's not just a matter of what people agree upon. So just real quickly, we've talked about this in the show before, but it bears repeating. Justice is not just one sort of thing. There's different types of justice depending on what you're talking about. Depending on how you met it all out, commutative justice is the justice of contracts. So that means if people enter to a contract, what is just about how they do so? What are the terms of thinking about whether someone gets what they do in that circumstance? Distributive justice, which is the idea that there's a common resource that isn't just sort of, so to speak, a one-to-one interaction. It's a resource that people share in common. And then social justice, which most people get wrong, often maligned, to be quite frank. But it's the idea of ideas of justice that either everyone participates in simply as one thing or not at all. So you think about like the union of states or something like this. This isn't something that people can participate. It either exists or it doesn't. Like the rule of law is like this as well. Rerum Novarum, to your point, has an interesting idea here because most people, and rightly so, think of wages mostly as a matter of contracts. I talk to my employer, we negotiate, and the idea is if what we agree upon, then we're good to go. Leo points out, though, that in situations especially where one side has either little or no power, which of course it's many times going to be the people with the money versus not, it can't simply be what people agree to, because if you're starving, you're going to agree to anything. And so what is the responsibility and justice of the state, of employers, of society in general, to try to make this a matter of distributive justice as well? But it's not wealth that they're distributing or redistributing. It's sort of this common good. Well, I blabbed on too long, Taylor, but with that in mind, maybe we can dig deeper into just wage and how Leo the 13th talks about it.
Yeah, I think your point is important because it's important to note that Leo is not saying that if you want to go to Walmart and buy something that you absolutely don't need, like a computer or a faster computer or an Xbox or something like that, that Microsoft is under some sort of duty to sell it to you by a certain price point, right? What he's talking about is that if you're working, you're for a living, and you're being employed by someone as a sort of full-time worker, the things are a little bit different there, and especially because you have to use the money that you're earning to provide for yourself and your family for the basic necessities of life, right, which is different than having nice clothing or nice things or whatever. So I think that's an important distinction that needs to be made there. And I think that another important distinction with Rerum Novarum that needs to be made is that he's not saying that it's the place of the state normatively to dole out amounts of money or to give people, a certain wage or to be directly involved in any manner at all. What he says is that, of course, it's the role of the state to make sure that there's temporal order and peace and that people are able to flourish. There's not people that are dying or starving in the streets, especially if there's enough wealth in the economy to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so what it says is that when things go wrong, there needs to be a receptivity on the part of the state to step in as minimally as possible, but to step in to help fix the problem, and not the state alone. He talks about that there's the responsibility of Christian charity, of work through private charities, work of private enterprises like unions, and all of those things need to work together holistically for the good of the society.
I think that is the part that gets missed out upon. Just like we were saying earlier that if you keep thinking of the just wage only in a matter of left, right, Democrat, Republican, you're going to miss the idea that actually just wage is ultimately about families and how do we have the capacity for families to be strong. I also think it comes to this when we talk about the distribution of wealth. Obviously a term charged with political fighting, that when you hear that term, if you just mean sort of the mean distribution of wealth, and like you said, that the state, or really anyone, is the sole arbiter of doling out money, you've already given in to a modern understanding of the world that the church doesn't adhere to. The question starts to be, if we believe in the common good, sure, we will say economists understand the economy, businessmen understand business, but what it's everybody's responsibility, but the church and the state, both as the temporal and spiritual head of a society, is to say our job is to ensure the just order of a society. And if economics in some way is being used to un- to disturb that or undermine it, it's not just a suggestion or even like it's your functionary or bureaucratic role. It's your role in caring about the ultimate destination of humans to step in and say, something must change. And I think Leo really gets that. That's what he's trying to say, was people don't look at it in that regard, and they should.
Yeah, yeah. I think that again, I said this a moment ago, but I think it bears repeating that this encyclical, if you just sort of hear people talking about it, perhaps, or you're only thinking about it through the paradigm of American, you know, contemporary American political thought, it's easy, right, to say that, oh, well, that is lauding private property too much or something, and so it's got to be a Republican document or it's a Democratic document because it talks about just wage. I think that, you know, as we've said, that entirely misses the point of the document. And I think that one of the things that it does in being a very anti-modern sort of secular thought document, one of the things that it does is it shows how sort of socialism and then also a kind of, I don't know what to call it, but a kind of unfettered capitalism where, you know, people are completely used and abused, workers are completely used and abused by employers, and they have no option but to be used and abused, that both of those kind of fall on the same error about what the state is. Both of them sort of see the state as being detached in some way from the good of the human person, and they both also are predicated upon an idea that the classes that are natural in society, the classes that are natural to human interaction, are constantly at war with one another. But really what the document is trying to emphasize is that the classes should exist in a kind of reciprocity, that everyone has their place, everyone has their role to play, and that what's good for the working class is ultimately what's good for the other classes. And St. Thomas talks about this in his appraisal of the state in the Summa, that it doesn't make sense, given what a society is, to think that one class could leech or be constantly at war with the other and for it not to sort of dirty their own house, if you will.
Taylor, you mentioned in the first half of the show that this document in Catholic social teaching, the entire tradition transcends, you know, simplistic left-right categories as we understand those things in an American sense. And I think to that point, it seems to me that if we're concerned about these matters, we don't have to wait necessarily until elections. Like, I'm just going to elect the right people, you know. But building strong institutions at the family level, you know, sodalities within parishes, et cetera, all of those things serve as a kind of buffer for individuals in the face of economic injustice, it seems to me. Any thoughts on, you know these sort of mediating institutions that have played an important role in our society, but maybe today are threatened in various ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these are issues that, you know, of course, at universities and places of education that people should be considering and talking about. You know, there's a lot of interest in social justice issues, and these are issues that are primary. I do think that one of the things that often gets left out when we're talking about social justice issues is the primacy of the family and how important the family is. You know, social justice is, by its nature, social. But all social interaction, you know, according to Aquinas, all social interaction is based in the family. And so if the family's not healthy, just like if the cells of the body aren't healthy, the whole won't be healthy. And I think that another way that these things can be instituted up beyond voting or getting involved in politics is through people who are employing people, especially those who run small businesses, which are so important. Rerum Novarum really, you know, if you read between the lines, it's implicitly endorsing businesses which are family-run businesses or businesses which are tight-knit, where there's a strong relationship, a kind of charity between the employer and the workers, and that those kind of things can really help to affect the Catholic social teaching beyond just talking in a classroom or going to the voting booth.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We're speaking with Dr. Taylor Patrick O'Neill, assistant professor of religious studies at Mount Mercy. Taylor, that really starts to hit home, because it's one thing to read an encyclical, talk about it in the abstract, to start to say, well, okay, you Catholics talk about Catholic social teaching, the common good. What do we do about it if it's not just vote every so often? And when we start to press this idea about families, we can also start to press the idea about what should the family really look like in a Catholic sense. You know, too often we think about families how they look absolutely right now, or maybe how we remember them at some golden age, like when we were 9 or 10 years old. The fact of the matter is the family itself has gone through many changes, and many of those changes are because of the onslaught of the modern world. So you think about reading the New Testament, per se, and when they talk about families and brothers and sisters and cousins, they have no idea of this nuclear family, right, closed in on itself, only buying resources for itself, not really sharing. To get at this idea is, there's not only practical ideas we have about how do you, buy from a small business, or how do you try to think about what's best for families. We can actually start to press the case, are we looking like the sort of family that the scriptures imagine, that the magisterium imagines, that Leo XIII is getting at? That might be the questions that we need to, that if we're honest about this document, those are the hard questions, but the good questions we can start to ask is, what would a family order towards the common good actually look like?
Yeah, I think that that's such a crucial question, and I think that one of the hints that Rerum Novarum gives us is a hint that maybe we might not immediately think of, which is that the closeness of a family is not entirely based upon, but can be aided by the ownership of property. And on the one hand, that might seem kind of trite to say that, oh, well, if you've got a bunch of stuff, that will help bring your family together. But I think it means something different than that. One of the things that Rerum Novarum touches on is the fact that when people have to sort of leave their town, go out looking for work, and be employed by someone else, this tends to, sort of practically, geographically split families up, and it also tends to take away one of the things that unites families, which are things like sharing a business or a trade that's passed down through generations, or even sharing property, a house, things like that. And I see this with certain families that have maintained, it doesn't have to be something great, but have maintained a kind of shared thing that holds for them some familial or sentimental value. So, just as a quick example, my wife's family, they own a farmhouse and a piece of land, and it's not an incredibly large piece of land, and the farmhouse itself, if I were to take you guys there, there's nothing on the surface that would make you think, oh, this is fantastic, right? The value of the house, the value of this shared land, is that it has this historical, sacramental value to them, right? That this is a place where cousins and aunts and uncles and moms and dads and brothers and sisters have been coming together for generations. And so I think that making sure that there's a kind of distribution where property is something that families can own beyond just, having a smartphone and, some bread, actually helps to bring families together, because humans are composite, right? It actually helps to sit on a couch or sit in the living room together and drink some coffee together, whatever. That helps to bring us together. And so one of the ways in which the family can be kind of resurrected is in being able to hold things in common with a family, even tangible things.
I think that what that calls to mind is Roger Scruton, a philosopher who pointed out the term oikophilia he coined. He was saying this in terms of the environment, that people won't care about the environment in total if they don't care about any one place, that they don't have a love of place or a love of home. And this is, I think, what I'm getting at is, we lament the loss of the nuclear family, but it's one of those deals where, well, if you weren't paying attention to lament the loss of the extended family, or you weren't paying attention to lament the loss of the communal family, right, beyond blood, and we keep going up, the church family, spirit, we've really shaved off as much as these, as many of these roots and connections as possible. To go back to a metaphor you gave, that humans become interchangeable mechanized parts to do some mechanized purpose. And so when you hear people say like, oh, well, if this factory closes down, well, they'll just move. They'll move to a new state. They'll move to a new place. And you go, well, then what Leo's talking about, this sort of common ownership of land or, like you said, sustainable property, or even the sort of relationships that make humans into a body, when we've shaved all that off, to now only care about the nuclear family is to so to speak, not care about the 15 steps prior that we needed to care about if we truly cared about the family.
Right, right. And if Thomas is right, if St. Thomas is right, that the family, not just the nuclear family, but the entire sort of wider sense of family, that if that's the basis for any society, societies, you know, as small as a township or societies as large as the global society in which we now all live, if the family's the basis for that, the fact that there's so much disorder in the family, I think, has direct relation, probably causative relation, to the fact that as a culture in America, right, all we can see, for the most part, is division. I mean, the State of the Union and the responses to that prove that we are in a constant state of division, and I think the salve, the healing, the fix for that has to start in the family. And that's a profoundly Catholic idea that I think the rest of modernity hopefully can get on board with sooner rather than later.
Well, Taylor, we've enjoyed this show thoroughly. We're getting to the end of the show, and as we always like to point out when we've had really wonderful shows, we could probably have another hour, but, you know, the airwaves can only take so much of Bud and I croaking at people with our voices addled by the cold. Hey, do you want to tell us what's going on out east? If people want to take a mini easy vacation from Des Moines and head out your way, what's some exciting stuff maybe happening out in Mount Mercy or anything around the area with you guys?
Yeah. So, Mount Mercy and Cedar Rapids, for those of you who aren't aware, we're doing a lot of good things out here. The religious studies major and minors are growing. We've got a lot of great students, and we've got students who are not religious studies majors and minors who are coming and taking classes in religious studies and philosophy. We've also got a new initiative that we're working on called the Center of Learning for the Church, which has to do with, you know, those who are involved with parish life, priests, seminarians, religious education, directors of youth ministry, are able to come and take some courses, maybe on things that interest them, things that will help them in pastoral ministries, or help them sort of giving to the life of the church. So, that's another thing that we're working on, and we're just trying to, you know, continue the Catholic mission of the university and to engage with the wider community, you know, in fruitful ways.
Well, it's been great to have you on the show, and as always, we're scheming ways to get the Mount Mercy Theology contingent over here to Des Moines so that we can have a big old Catholic shindig. So,
right.
We thank you. Hopefully, we'll get you back on the show soon, and hopefully, we'll get you into over here to Des Moines. It's been great. Thanks for coming on the show.
Great. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate you having me as a guest.
Yep. God bless.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, Bud, it's ending that time, and maybe everybody's happy about it because our voices, I think, are deteriorating as we speak.
I'll be honest, it's kind of nerve-wracking to do a show with a serious cold because as I was asking my questions, I was just nervous my voice was going to go out during the middle of the question. It was that bad.
Yeah, when our voices actually sound worse than the eagle screech, that's when you know that we need to drink some nice chamomile tea or whatever that you like.
As Dr. O'Neill was talking, you know, there are the economic questions that sometimes feel really huge and complex, and we need Catholic thinkers to be engaging those. We need Catholic business people to, you know, be giving a witness to the church's teachings on these matters. I couldn't help but think, like, that whole conversation also pushes us out of our comfortable boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so easy in our society to just get into this groove of comfortability, you know, and for myself even, to go home and veg at the end of the day and just turn on Netflix and, you know, just what we call the daily grind. But I think that talk about how can our families be witnesses, how can we build stronger parishes, you know, all these different Catholic apostolates and things that we can join, that we have to strengthen our bonds as a community so that when we have, you know, families and individuals who might fall through the cracks, we're there to be able to pick them up.
Yeah, I'm a little worried, though, when we start talking about this, you know, we're all like, yeah, we need to have people who you know, have small businesses and, like, contribute to society, I'm always all like, oh, they're trying to figure out how to make people like me and Bud not be a part of society, because I don't know what business I could run well. I would give away everything for free. You know, it's funny that, like, yeah. I have the reputation of being like, let's argue and have these fights, but, like, I could never be a salesman because I'd be all like, just take it. It's fine.
Well, as both of us being involved in Catholic education, Catholic ministries, we've both developed a real gratitude towards our benefactors, and I've always thought, oh man, if every member of the church was cut from the cloth that you and I were, we'd pretty much be meeting in shacks and just eating pork and beans.
Yeah, bankrupt. Though I agree. Well, unless, you know, you were talking about, like, you know, really serious matters, but in frivolous matters, maybe we should name our eagle Rerum the Eagle, after Rerum Novarum.
Rerum the Eagle.
Rerum the Eagle.
I better do a Latin word search before we...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it means wealth, you know, so, but at any rate. Yeah. Bud, man, we wrapped up another show. There's all sorts of stuff that if people want to be a part of Iowa Catholic Radio that they can do. We actually have an InTune bi-weekly newsletter, so two emails per month. We don't bombard you, Bud, but you can figure out what's going on. It's easy to navigate. You can find out about all the events we're having, like the men's conference coming up on March 10th, the Ladies Mosaic Luncheon on February 8th. You know, maybe, Bud, you can start doing an advice column, maybe a fashion column. There's all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's the sky's the limit, Bud.
Dear Abby, but it's Bud Marr. Yeah, or, you know, do the Bible in a year with us at 5:30. The rosary is prayed right before our show, so kind of a leading of prayer before our discussions. Any way you can plug into our ministry here at Iowa Catholic Radio, we're really grateful for your presence and your support.
And as always, if you want to text us, 515-223-1150, even if it's off-air, we can maybe answer the question next time. On Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio, the Twitter handle, iacatholicradio on Twitter.com. Bud, it's been fantastic. Get some rest for your voice. And may Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our families, in our hearts, in our families, in our towns, city, state, the entire nation, the entire world. This has been The Uncommon Good. God bless, and we'll see you next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.